We would like to welcome you to the October 8th, 2025 meeting of the Savannah Historic Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes in new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for a decision. At this time, please mute your phone so we can clearly hear everyone and have a clear record. Sign postings. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Okay. Were there any projects that were not posted this month? Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visually compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Petition of GIT Homes, Nazar Jaber, 2500-4271 COA, 618 Montgomery Street subdivision. Number two, petition of Ethos Preservation, Ellen Harris, 25004-527 COA, 515 Tatnall Street fence. Three, petition of Sarah Goosey, 25004477-COA 320 East Jones Street gate replacement. Number four, petition of JDH Decks and Fences, Cassandra Hendricks, 25004535 COA 233 Abercorn Street, installation of gate and fence. Number five, petition of signs by James LLC, 25-004295-COA, 311 West Congress Street, illuminated sign. Six, petition of signs by James LLC, 25-004299-COA, 313 West Congress Street, illuminated sign. Petition number seven, petition of J. Elder Studio, Jerome Elder, 25-004531 COA, 8 East Broughton Street, illuminated sign. Is there any, Is there any member of the public or any board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda?
Woodfield, yes, I'd like to move the petition signed by James at 313 West Congress to the regular agenda, and I believe we can deal with it first on the new on the regular agenda.
Okay.
Helms, I'd also like to move the sign by James for 311 West Congress Street at the same time to the regular agenda to be viewed at the same time. Is there basically one project?
So I have 311 West Congress Street illuminated sign and 313 West Congress illuminated sign.
That's correct.
So we will remove petition of signs by James LLC 25-004 295 COA 311 West Congress Street illuminated sign and petition of signs by James LLC 25-004 299 COA 313 West Congress Street illuminated sign. Other than those, do I have a motion for the approval of the rest of the consent agenda?
Holmes, I so move.
Do I have a second? Coleman. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. We will move on to the adoption of the agenda. Let's see here. If your item was on the consent agenda and it has been approved, you are welcome to leave or stay. Adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Coleman. I move that we accept the agenda as amended with the reconfigured consent agenda items.
Do I have a second?
I second Helms.
Okay, the motion is to approve, but then to add the two items by James sign to the regular agenda. All in favor say aye.
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 The motion to approve has been approved and is passed. Approval of the minutes. Minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the September 10th, 2025 minutes?
I make a motion to approve the September minutes with corrections being made with a certain person's name.
Your name?
The document.
I'm guessing your name was misspelled. Okay, Mr. Thompson, do I have a second?
Hamer, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The motion to approve the minutes has been approved and is passed. So we'll move on to the items requested to be removed from the final agenda. There are none listed, so we will move on to the continued agenda. These applications have been requested to be continued for the following meeting. Petition of Whitfield Signs 25-003434 COA West Perry Street signage 11 petition of Array Design Shauna Cursa, sorry about that, 25-004101 COA 400 block Montgomery Street, new construction, part one, height and mass. Is there a motion to continue the items on the continued agenda?
Second, Thompson.
All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, requests for extensions, there are none. Now we will move on to the regular agenda. Moving on to the regular agenda, staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have an opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by the board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to the public comments. The board will then go into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide comments if you do not have any. If you are joining us virtually for the first time, locate your control panel. Public that wishes to submit comment, use the raise hand feature. I will be notified and I will call on you by name. You will submit your name for the board for the record, and then you may comment. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. So the first application will be petition of J. Elder Studio, Martin Renzeghi, 25-004198 COA 219 East York Street, new construction accessory buildings part 1 and 2.
Were we going to do the consent items first or at the end?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yes, we will do that.
Okay. All right.
So we will start with petition of signs by James LLC 25-004295 COA 311 West Congress Street, illuminated sign.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board.
Can we just group these together?
They are two different file numbers is how they came in. So we did have to review them separately, but we'll keep it moving. All right. So the applicant's requesting approval to install one illuminated projecting sign for the business located at 311 West Congress Street. 311 West Congress Street was built in 1914 and is a contributing resource. It is the downstairs portion of the building shared with 313 West Congress Street. The proposed sign is for this business known as Honky Tonk, though it is in the same building as the newly relocated Seed Eco Lounge on the second floor. They both have separate entrances with their own addresses. It is common to see business signage installed on buildings throughout the DCBD districts, especially the stretch of West Congress Street, just to kind of show as we go through this. We'll start down this way. This is the business here. Just down a ways, we have this city market sign. There's clearly other types of signage. And then on the corner is the Anthropology sign. This one. Staff, when we review signage projects, we do walk around and look at the surrounding area. So within the view shed, we've got this social club sign here. This is just a heavily commercial area. The inclusion of the signs, staff did not find would take away from the historic character or distinctive features of the building as signs are temporary. The sign is clearly of its present day time and would not be seen as a conjectural feature. Staff does recommend that the signs are installed through the mortar joints rather than the historic brick. When the application first came in, staff was requesting a little bit more information because it at first wasn't clear what the signage, the color scheme exactly, which was this whole thing going to be illuminated, only part of it. This is just a simple rendering. The height of the sign is actually more accurately shown here. It's 15 feet above the street level, but just to kind of give that little profile view, along with you'll see the Seed Eco Lounge sign in the next one. But this is going to only be the letters are backlit and nothing else. So that kind of cleared up some of the staff concern as well with the illumination. So for special sign districts, projecting signs are allowed. The proposed sign, as noted, is in the DCBD district. And then, where illumination is permitted, reverse Silhouette or cutout letters are encouraged to reduce the glare where backlighting is applied. The standard is met. The letters are cut out and will be individually lit to reduce glare as the halo lighting effect creates a more diffused glow of light rather than a harsh glare. The letters, as noted, are the only portion of the sign that will be illuminated. So with regard to the fact that there are two signs for projecting ground and wall signs, which are grouped together in the ordinance, where a business establishment fronts on more than one street or pedestrian walkway providing public access, or there is one wall or projecting sign for each frontage. Essentially, it's saying every business, one projecting or wall sign shall be permitted for each business establishment. So these were both taken into consideration. The aggregate total signage in this area is 30 square feet. The honky tonk sign is 20 square feet and the Seed Eco Lounge is 6 square feet. So the aggregate signage area meets the standard. The projecting distance from the wall is less than 6 feet, which meets the standard. Wall and projecting signs shall be erected only on the signable area of the building. The standard is met. And as mentioned, it's 15 feet above the pedestrian walkway. For sign illumination, where permitted, signs shall be designed and installed so it does not cast light directly from any source of illumination onto any street or adjacent property. The letters will be illuminated from the back. This aligns with the many existing illuminated sign types along West Congress Street and the immediate vicinity. The property is not in a residential district and is not across the street from a residential use. Further, staff found that overall, you know, everything had been met and therefore was requesting, recommending approval. Let me pull that recommendation up for you. Approve the request to install one projecting illuminated sign for the business at 311 West Congress Street with the following condition: because the project is otherwise visually compatible, meets the standards, and that is to ensure the sign is installed through the mortar joints rather than the historic brick. Thank you.
Are there any questions for staff?
Counselor, are we treating this as a separate project from the next one?
These are, because they're two different addresses and they came in, we're reviewing each sign individually, but we still took them into account.
Two signs, if we deal with two, if these things differently?
Yeah, they're each their own, so you can.
So they could actually put up two honky-tonk signs.
No, they can't. They can only have one projecting or wall sign per business entry. They do, but one is 311 Honky Tonk and two is the Seed Eco Lounge.
Right, so they can put up one on each.
So they can, this is what they can have and what they're asking for. They're not asking for more than what the ordinance says. And let me just give you that image.
But you keep telling me that there are two separate applications and therefore they could have two separate signs.
No. They're two separate applications because they're two different addresses. One is the lower part. One is the upper part. The ordinance says that each business with its own entrance can have one. So that means they can each have one.
Right. So each, we're still back to two signs, I think.
No, it's two in the grand total. The grand total is two and the aggregate square footage can be no more than 30 square feet. And these are at 26 together. That's all they'd be allowed.
Then why not turn down one and approve the other?
Well, they're two different businesses, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
And therefore they could have two different signs.
They can each have one.
I'm wrong.
Because what's being said is each business can have one sign. These are two businesses, one sign
per business.
So that's one sign.
Excuse me, sir. If you can please turn on your microphone. That'd be great.
There's only one. Could you guys pull your mic? Told you so we could hear it for the record.
One,
you turn your mic on.
Based on what staff has said, there's two businesses located in this one building, mm-hmm. but they have separate addresses, but they're two distinct businesses. Each business is allowed a sign. So that would be one sign for Honky Tonk and one sign for the other, despite the fact that they're on the same building. So it complies.
Okay, so does the other building already other property already have a sign?
I don't believe so. I think this was all the same business. So it was just this one.
So they could theoretically use the approval for whichever one is that business for a new sign?
They could use the approval for exactly what is in the approval only, which would be this, if it were to be approved.
Perhaps if you point out the second sign, that would clarify the two different signs being asked.
This is for the downstairs business here on the main storefront level, and then upstairs at 313 is Seed Eco Lounge, which will be the second one. This is an existing sign because this previously existed elsewhere, and they're just asking to move the sign to the new location.
Are there any other questions for staff? Okay. Would the petition?
Helms, I have one more question. How many of the signs on that street are illuminated? There are a lot of signs on the street, but how many of them are actually illuminated?
Some of them are exterior illuminated like this. There's some enclosed. You know, which they're allowed to have. This is illuminated. If you go down towards the bars, just one block down, they all have illuminated signs, either exterior or interior illuminated. The Anthropology sign as well.
That's not illuminated, is it?
Yeah, Lady and Sons, I guess that's closed, but there's Madame Butterfly, I think, in that same row.
So. Are there any additional questions for staff? Would the petitioner please come forward, state your name for the record?
It may be online, James Byrne said.
Nope, I don't see anyone.
Okay. So I've been given cards where each member of the public can come and speak. And the first name is Mr. Jones.
Good afternoon. Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. The honky tonk sign seems just a little too large. Keep in mind that you have two standards to apply here. One is the design standards, which are those specifications about how large it can be. And I think Caitlin has done a good job of explaining that this fits the design standards. The second set of standards that you must apply are the visual compatibility standards. So please don't get distracted by whether this is the right number of square feet or inches. You need to make a decision. Do you think that this is visually compatible with the contributing buildings within view? That is the decision that you need to make. I've been hearing simply to discuss the design standards. Please address the visual compatibility standards. In my opinion, it's not visually compatible. Perhaps if it shrinks down a little bit, 20%, 25%, it would be more visually compatible. Thank you.
Okay, we do not have any other public comments, and the petitioner is not present, so we will go into board discussion. I will start with Mr. Helms.
I have two objections to it. Both of them are basically visual compatibility issues. One is that it's illuminated, and I don't think there are that many of those things that are in the immediate vicinity that are illuminated. The second is its size. At 10 feet, it is bigger than the other signs except for non-illuminated signs like the Anthropology sign. And so I think that I would be happier with the sign if it were not illuminated and more like 6 feet instead of, 10. Those are my comments.
Mr. Coleman?
No comments.
Ms. Woodfield?
I'm also very concerned about the size of the sign. I think this particular block, which is our context, the contributing buildings, We need to be visually compatible with them, with this block. This is very, very much out of proportion. I don't see the illumination very clearly from what's been presented to us, so I might keep that an open mind about that. But I do feel it's very, very much out of scale with this low scale commercial neighborhood. It's not on a corner. It's not in the big entertainment street. It's a very historic street. And I think this sign is not visually compatible with the buildings around it.
Mr. Thompson.
I understand the comments being made about the size. However, I think most of us would be very surprised how big signs are when you take them down and get close to them, like street signs and stuff. They're huge, but they're up there because they're in an environment that you're looking at them a distance. And I think that's what we're dealing with here is a distance that you want to see this sign. And I think the sign is just fine.
Ms. Hamer?
My only concern is just the graphic presentation and lack of clarity of the exact placement of the sign relative to the facade. I want to be clear if it is going to be mounted above the storefront cornice or if it's going to be straddling the storefront cornice as the rendering shown. Is that confirmed?
Yes, this was confirmed that this is the proposed 15 feet. As you can see here, they note the, I don't know why they put it in inches, but it's 15 feet.
That it's a pretty accurate representation of the elevation?
As far as I can tell, I mean, you know, if you wanted to request something more detailed, that's certainly in your right.
No further comment. Okay, we'll go around for a second time. Mr. Helms.
No further comment.
Mr. Coleman.
No comment.
Ms. Whitfield.
No further comment.
Mr. Thompson.
No further comment.
Ms. Hamer.
No further comment.
At this point, all public debate is closed and no further comments will be accepted. We will now entertain a motion.
Helms, I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review continue the petition 25-004295 COA for an illuminated sign for 313 West Congress Street. In order to discuss shrinking the sign by some amount and making it therefore look less huge in the visual context of its block.
Can I just add a point of clarification? This one is 311 West Congress.
Yes.
I know they're like,
we're at 311.
Which
motion is to continue.
And then did you want a date certain, whether it's next month or?
Next month, this be fine.
Okay.
Woodfield, I'd like to amend the motion that we get clarification on exactly how it's mounted and what the illumination looks like. With that clarification or that amendment, I will second the motion.
Well, I think I have to read the first motion, correct? And then she can amend it? Okay, thank you. So let's see. The motion is...
Am I allowed to withdraw my motion and just second hers?
You can withdraw your motion and she can make a new motion and you can second it. So she would have to make a new motion. The new motion should have a date certain and some specifics with regards to what you would like to see if the item comes back.
Consider my motion withdrawn, Helms.
We will now entertain a motion.
Whitfield, I would like to make a motion that we continue the project on 311. You put the information up here. 311 Congress, file 25004295. We can continue it to the next meeting, which is November 12th. And the motion is that we, that the sign be reduced in scale so it's visually compatible with the street, the other contributing buildings in this neighborhood, that this block, and that we also have a clear indication of how the sign is, where the sign is mounted on the building and what the illuminated sign will look like.
Okay. So the motion is to for 311 West Congress Street to be moved, to be continued to the November 12th, 2025 meeting, and the sign to be reduced in scale and a clear indication of where it will be mounted and the illumination.
Is there a second?
Is there a second?
Helm, second.
Okay. Mr. Helms, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Ms. Whitfield?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Nay.
Ms. Amer?
Aye.
The ayes have it. So now we will move on to petition of signs by James LLC 25-004-299 COA 313 West Congress Street illuminated sign.
Thank you. This is Caitlin again. I won't go through the entire presentation because we kind of we'll be covering a lot. This is to install an illuminated projecting sign at 313. So this will be for the upstairs business here. And this is an existing sign. This is where it was on its old location. So much like the first one, it meets the sign ordinance standards. You know, staff did the Secretary of the Interior standards saying it's common to see the signage installed on buildings throughout DCBD. The sign is clearly of its present day. For a relationship of materials, texture, and color, the body of the sign is black and the lettering is purple. This is acceptable in the context of the size of the sign and the commercial nature of a block in this district. It is made of aluminum, which is a common material for current signs. And the size is 6 square feet. Staff found this was this rendering here give you a little sense of where it will be going. The staff found the standards were met and therefore recommends approval with the same condition of installing through the mortar joints and not the historic brick.
Are there any questions for staff?
No, just a quick clarification. All they're doing is dropping it by 2 feet?
No, this sign was on a different building. So that little picture there, that was just like where it had been.
Where are they moving it to? I thought that was the building.
No, that's the proposed building, but Seed Eco Lounge existed elsewhere, and this is where it was. They're just saying, like, this is how it looked when it was on the old building.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions for staff? To my knowledge, the petitioner is not here.
Still not online then?
It's the same name.
Yeah, James Burnside. Okay, yep. Thanks for checking.
Okay. Now we will go into public discussion, and I believe Mr. Andrew Jones would like to speak.
I'll pass on this one. Thank you very much.
Okay. And again, the petitioner is not here, so we will go into board discussion at this time. We will now enter the board discussion. No further comments will be accepted. Ms. Amer, we'll start with you.
No comment.
Thompson?
I think staff recommendation hits this one, right?
Ms. Whitfield?
Since this is an existing sign that's being moved, it's modest. I have no concerns and questions about it.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Mr. Helms?
No comment.
Okay, with that, I will not go around for a second time. I will entertain a motion.
Hamer, I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review approve the petition of applicant 25004299-COA, signs by James at 313 West Congress Street for illuminated signs. Approve the request to install one projecting illuminated sign for the business located at 313 West Congress Street with the following condition, because the project is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. One, ensure that the sign is installed through the mortar joints rather than the historic brick.
Okay, the motion is to approve with the condition to ensure that the sign is installed through the mortar joints rather than the historic brick. Do I have a second?
Thompson, second.
Okay, Mr. Helms, how do you vote?
Aye.
Coleman?
Aye.
Whitfield?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Hamer?
Aye.
The ayes have it. Okay. Now we will move on to petition of J. Elder Studios, Martin Runzeggi, 2-00198-COA, 219 East York Street, new construction.
Afternoon, this is Kelly Mitchell. So again, the applicant's request new construction small part 1 and 2 for an accessory dwelling unit, 219 East York Street. As a reminder, this project was heard last month and was continued by this board to give the applicant time to address board concerns. The applicant has since partially redesigned and provided updated drawings for y'all's review. So the photo you see on my left is what was previously proposed last month. What you see on my right is what is currently proposed. So the applicant is now proposing almost fully stucco with a metal roof. The accessory building walls have more traditional looking windows in this case as well. The dormer is also gone from the lane facing elevation. This is the elevation that faces the home. So in this case, the dormer is still here, but the materials on the main massing is stucco as well. And then these are the side elevations. Main change being these openings are no longer present what's being proposed. Overall, staff did find the proposed design standards, but there was a couple of things of note we wanted to put on the record. One is the proposed design does not have a stream course. In this case, staff finds that to be appropriate because the majority of the accessory buildings on this lane, which are contributing, have a similar configuration. So the sole dormer, again, that you see right here, appears to have eaves to some extent. Sets and drawings do not show these eaves. There's also no dimension for this where it's unclear how deep those eaves are, so the applicant just needs to clarify that. Also, the applicant just needs to propose that this is true stucco being used as well. And the final thing of discussion that was a major point of discussion at the previous meeting was this mezzanine. So staff has since reached out to the city to get kind of further clarification on how they interpret the definition of a mezzanine. As a reminder, the ordinance states that the aggregate floor area of a mezzanine can be no more than one-third of the area of the room or space in which the mezzanine is located. So per the city, the mezzanine should be measured as if there was a full floor plate at the mezzanine level. So in this case, it would be this area in the orange. This drawing is provided in the applicant's middle packet. Per the applicant, this area is about 270 square feet. The mezzanine is a total of 90 square feet, which is one-third of that 270. So staff finds in this case that mezzanine does meet the standards. The applicant has also reached out to the city themselves and has had discussions with the city, and he can clarify that as well. So with that, staff does recommend approval with condition that you see on the screen. Does the board have any questions?
Are there any questions? Okay. Would the petitioner come forward and state your name for the record?
How do I switch between this one and yours? Just in case.
Okay. That's for your right here. Okay. Right here.
Okay. Good afternoon. Jerome Aldo with J. Aldo Studio. Well, I think that staff did a good job explaining the changes that we made. We did get the opportunity to confirm with John Anagnos of the city that the mezzanine that is shown in that in the drawing is indeed a mezzanine. It's something that he will also have to confirm prior to even issuing permits or the MPC staff being able to stamp it for permitting. So we'll definitely have to check another opportunity to make sure that it does meet that requirement. But as it stands now, it does. Secondly, I think after hearing the concerns of the neighbors, what we chose to do is, I believe, a lot more appropriate, at least in terms of what is existing on that lane. And I hope that as you look at this and consider it, it is sufficient for us to get an approval for this project. I'm not sure if there were no questions per se, but if there are any, please let me know. And I'm here to answer. We do agree with staff's comments, and we'll be able to clarify and verify all of the additional dimensions for the eaves, as well as the true stuff. Any questions?
Does the board have any questions for the petitioner? Okay, we will move on to public comments. First to speak, I invite Mr. Andrew Jones.
Good afternoon, Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. Over the past few months, the OPC has represented the concerns of many preservationists and downtown residents in opposition to this project. There are still problems, but we want to recognize the staff's work, the public's involvement, the neighbors, the board, and especially the architect, Jerome Elder, for moving towards a result that is much more closely aligned with the ordinances than the original. On visual compatibility, we would like the board to apply as strict a standard as you applied for the carriage house at 11 West Gordon. If you remember, the original one on the left here showed a window with coffin windows on the side, and you asked them to simplify it to evenly spaced windows of the same size. We would hope that you would also ask that of this applicant, that rather than having one window and then a paired window, that there simply be two windows of the same side, evenly spaced. The board's variance approval last month, however, is more problematic, and we would like to make the statement for the record. We do not believe the application met a single criterion for that variance. There was virtually no discussion on this important precedent-setting exception to the rules. In the future, we hope the HDBR will read and apply the criteria for the variances set forth in Section 3.21 of the ordinance. While recognizing that there is still strong opposition to this proposal, you have received letters in opposition. We sincerely thank all of those who've been involved in working together to improve it, understanding that this proposal has very serious and longstanding implications for the city's future. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Next, we have Paul Kobet, president of the Downtown Neighborhood Association.
Good afternoon. My name is Paul Kobet, and I'm here to speak as president of the Savannah Downtown Neighborhood Association. We're here today to speak in opposition to this proposal. As you know, this proposal has had several design iterations come before this board, each one progressively improved from what began as a very contemporary overhyped design. And we appreciate the work that the design folks have done to get us to this place. However, the core issue that we've objected to in the past hearings and the issue we're objecting to today has not been changed. The iteration is still too tall, at least when you look at the submittal packet. When you look down that block compared to the other carriage houses, it's still taller than the other carriage houses. And it's still not quite the same style as the principal dwelling, which is a requirement. Due to what we consider to be height and style issues, this design simply is not visually compatible, and we would be looking at further improvements. We're not trying to stifle development. We're simply asking this board to respect and protect Savannah's unique architectural heritage. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker will be Corey Hyland.
Trying to advance the.
You can use this then. Okay. Or use
the arrows. Okay, use the arrows. Thank you very much. I'm Corey Hyland. I'm the neighbor of the people who want to put up this structure. Let's look at where we started. So here's where we started. Then we came in July of 2025 with this next rendition. This was denied. Then we came in August with this rendition. This was not denied, but continued. And here's where we are today. By the way, the carriage house just to the left of this structure is my carriage house. So this is what happens when we work together. What happens when the community gets involved and this board recognizes its responsibility to the public. When the architect and the neighbors get together to share views and concerns, when these things happen, we move closer together and eventually arrive at a compromise, hopefully. Of course, it's not perfect. Everybody won't be happy. And although the latest design is quite different from the original, one could argue that's actually not the point, because it's not where we've come from, but where we are today. And where we are today is in a much better place as far as the design standards. Not perfect, but better. What we have today, after almost 5 months and many hours of staff and HDBR members' time, many deliberations, almost 250 letters opposing this, and meetings between the architect and neighbors, what we have today is better than what we started with. But the proposal still has problems. The good news is that these problems, with the exception of the variance, can easily be overcome. The board need only apply the ordinances and do so consistently. In the end, I want to thank you for your patience and persistence in moving this project towards something that hopefully we can all live with. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Richard Patter. Okay. Would the petitioner like to respond to the public comment?
Well, firstly, I want to say thank you to the public, especially Mr. Jones and Mr. Highland, because I did get a few opportunities to meet with them, talk with them, and I believe in working with them, we are able to get to this point. One of the only thing that I wanted to mention, just going back a little when there is a discussion of height, is we are still within the height limit, so there's no exception or variance being asked for that. And I wanted to just provide just updated views of the lane showing the building to scale. Mr. Highland's carriage house has a steeper roof, and so it does read a bit lower. And in this document, if I go down, I think you'll see, saw this at the previous meeting where we were measuring the undersides of eaves. But in general, most of the buildings, in terms of their overall height, what is the perceived one because of the eaves, lies somewhere between 18 feet and 20 feet, which is where we still are. We are at 19 foot two. Just a little further down the lane, here's a good example of that in this building. Same thing, and it just keeps going. So Mr. Highlands is a bit lower, and that's because of how steep his roof is. So at the 25 feet, yes, we may be approximately a foot and a half taller at our peak than other structures, but I do believe that perceived height, and once it's built, hopefully, it will be understood that it does not read as large as it does when you see some of the three-dimensional views from generated from the computer program. And that's all I have, but thank you all for your time and comments.
Thank you. We will now go into board discussion. Ms. Hamer?
So reviewing the ordinance, I understand the public concern with the paired windows on the street facade. Does look like that is allowed, but, and I do have some concerns with that not being a precedent and for carriage house architecture having paired windows like that. However, I do fear that if we remove those, it will just only increase the verticality of the structure. So I feel like it almost kind of helps break up the verticality by not having just two rectangular windows. Otherwise, I think this is a significant improvement from the previous iterations, and I agree with staff that this is visually compatible. Again, just the only concern is just the paired windows, but I'm, again, not sure if removing that would alleviate the kind of proportion of the openings.
Mr. Thompson.
It's rare we see some movement of the public, so that's a nice occurrence. Yeah, we could address all those concerns one step further. I sort of have a question. Maybe staff can answer this quickly. Is that all right?
Sure.
Okay. So as I looking at the heights, the main floor is 8 feet above the garage floor, if I'm reading that right. Mm-hmm. Can you show that real quick?
Yeah, let me pull up the plans real quick.
Yeah, under this middle. I could have asked this question earlier, but just trying to get with the mezzanine there, I get it all. Okay, yeah, I'm looking at the next one down. That'll work. Okay, so 8 feet, yeah, and then the mezzanine is at 16, so that's another 8 feet then, okay. And then the top clearance in the mezzanine is how tall? I don't see that. Is that, so it's got to be more than 3 feet, so.
I'm assuming it will be wherever the
height
is.
Right there, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, that was my question. That answered it. I didn't quite see how the mezzanine fit in there height-wise. So, yeah, I think it's come a long way, and I support staff recommendation.
Ms. Woodfield?
I appreciate the comments from the public and the neighbors, and we've all worked very hard to bring this to a better compatibility with the lane and suitable for its location. It is a new building. I think we have to allow a little bit of variation. It's compatible, I believe, but I think the windows, as they're designed, I can see that he's trying to match a floor plan. He's trying to deal with a double garage, a garage door and a gate. So, you know, I feel there's reasons that the design is there. It is a new construction. We don't have to mimic the old construction. But I think it still has a bit of maybe the owner and the architect's desire for unique. But it's still, I think, compatible and appropriate for the context, you know, after all these iterations. So I'm pleased. Thank you.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Mr. Helms?
I have several comments, none of which I think are necessarily disqualifying. First is that I agree that it would be better to have three windows that are sort of evenly spaced rather than one plus two, just because it doesn't set, that doesn't set a precedent in this wood. Secondly, the other comment that I would have is that in some of these pictures, this looks like a baby version of the Amelia with white and black trim. And I'm hoping that that's not what they're actually planning on doing. That, you know, it's a gray or a dark gray and hopefully with white trim, which would, you know, match the rest of the buildings better. You know, if it's just a baby version of the Amelia, that's really dating this project to the early 2025. Other than that, I have no comments.
Okay, we'll go back around for a second time. Ms. Amer, no further comment. Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
No further comments.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Mr. Helms?
No further comment.
At this time, we'll entertain a motion.
Woodfield, shall I? I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review approve the petition of J. Elder Studios and Martin Rosanna Zigig. Petition number 25004198 at 219 York, East York Street, as submitted, because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah ordinance, with the conditions as stated here. I'll read them. Provide the proposed window materials. Confirm that the windows are inset a minimum of 3 inches. The eave depth for the dormer and the location of the refuse. Confirm that true stucco is being used.
Do I have a second? Hamer, second. Okay, the motion is to approve 219 East York Street, 25-004198 COA, with the conditions being met to provide the proposed windows materials, to confirm that the windows are inset at a minimum of 3, and an eave depth for the dormer and the location of the refuse. Confirm that the confirm that the true stucco is being used. How do you vote, Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Mr. Coleman?
Aye.
Woodfield?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Hamer?
Aye.
The ayes have it. Okay. We will now move on to Item number 13, petition of Rose Architects, Kevin Rose, 25-003528 COA, 118 West Harris Street, addition and variance recommendation request.
Afternoon, this is Kelly again. Again, the applicant is requesting approval for a rear addition and a variance recommendation request for the property located at 118 West Harris Street. This project was heard at the previous HDBR meeting, but was continued to address board concerns. And then, like the previous project, we'll go through and show how this project has changed from the previous proposal.
Kelly, I don't mean to interrupt you, but if anybody in the audience has anything they need to talk about with another individual, could you please step outside the room? Thank you.
So the photo again you see on my left was what was previously proposed. What you see on my right is what's currently proposed. So among the changes on the rear is this pergola deck type element has since been removed. Same thing with this deck element. The addition has also been pulled out to the lanes. That's even with the other accessory buildings on this lane. Along with that, the hallway element has been lengthened, and this element right here has also been enlarged just a hair. The deck has also been moved to be on kind of the interior facing portion of the property facing the courtyard. Also, these fixed windows have also been added to the application as well. So with that, overall staff finds proposed project meets the standards. We want to highlight a couple of things real quick. The applicant has provided some additional information on kind of what's happening on this rear portion of the main house. The applicant is proposing to add one window on the ground garden level, which won't be seen due to this fence, as well as one window on the second level. Per the applicant, the window configuration will match what was there previously, while the windows themselves will match what's on the existing home and will be constructed of wood. Wood corbels are also being proposed in the cornice line. Those are seen on the front of the house as well as on the neighboring property. The applicant also, the drawings appear to show also second material being continued all the way down. The applicant will need to confirm whether or not that is accurate. And finally, the applicant also indicated that they'll be patching and repairing the stucco in time. The applicant did provide photos of cross stucco in the application. They also need to confirm if extensive work is necessary, such as the full removal of the stucco. Again, the applicant is also proposing these fixed windows on two sections of the hallway element. Staff did visit the site multiple times to figure out whether or not those fixed windows will be visible from the street. This photo right here is what you see from Barnard Street, where the tree is about where those windows will be. So they will be slightly visible, but from a very particular angle. And of course, it'll be minimally visible. We won't be able to see those windows or the hallway from Whitaker Street due to existing site conditions on the neighboring properties. And it's unclear if those, the windows will be visible from the lane. This is what you see from the lane and likely won't be visible from Oglethorpe. And this is standing on the sidewalk on the other side of that parking lot. Per the standards, fixed windows are neither approved nor prohibited, so the board has the ability to approve fixed windows in this situation. In this case, staff finds that the windows meet the standards since they are located on secondary elevations, will be minimally visible, and are not being used as a primary building material. Finally, the applicant is requesting a variance recommendation request. This is for the lot area. As a minor note, the staff report said the lot coverage is going to be 80% per the application, 79.75. So it's a little inconsistency, but just wanted to throw that out. The increase in lot coverage per the applicant is due to addressing the board's previous concerns, which included the concerns over the pergola element that was again facing the lane, as well as the main massing of this addition being pulled off the lane, as was previously proposed. To help address, again, board concerns, applicant altered the length of the hallway and the size of the main portion of the addition. Overall, staff found that the variance standards were met in this case. So with that, staff does approve the request for the rear addition with the conditions that you see on the screen, as well as recommend that this board recommend approval to ZBA for the lot coverage as well. With that, does the board have any questions?
Are there any questions for staff?
Kelly, Woodfield, I just wanted to clarify the city's position on the large upper deck.
They talk about this one right here, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, so again, we talked with our development services about it, and per development services, they had no concerns about this deck as long as it was not infringing on into the side setbacks. In this case, there's a zero lot line that's allowed. And as long as this thing was not adding to the lot coverage, and since it is uncovered, it won't add to it. So the development service was not concerned about that deck.
Okay, and it's my understanding that there is a setback on this eastern side of the deck. Could you show that in elevation? Because I think that makes a difference that it, you know, the deck doesn't go quite to the edge of that building.
I can pull up the side plan real quick as well, and that may show a little bit better as well. One second. Information always likes to hide when I'm looking for it. So give me one second. Okay. This is what the site plan is showing. It's like it may be close to it, but again, the applicant can confirm where exactly that thing is sitting compared to the property line.
Okay, thank you. I'll ask the applicant. Thank you.
Are there any other questions for staff?
Helms, just one. I thought that one of the main objections and one of the reasons it was that we have a second story pass through there in the middle of that picture, which is the thing that actually blocks the view from one, you know, through the things and breaks up the historic massing of house versus lane. Am I correct in that?
I believe that was a point of discussion previously. But yeah, but that was discussed at the previous meeting. And you can ask the applicant why they intend to keep it this way, but staff has not seen no alternatives to this design in terms of how the walkway was designed.
Why not just leave it open?
That's a big question for the applicant. That'll be a question for the applicant. He didn't confirm.
Are there any other additional questions?
Why did the staff approve it if it doesn't fit the criteria for what's in the historic district?
Staff found that this design did meet our standards as they're currently written. I know, again, the board previously had concerns about it, but staff felt that the standards, the ordinance was met in this case.
Are there any additional comments for staff? Okay, thank you. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon, everyone. Kevin Rose with Rose Architects. Thank you for letting me speak today. I'd like to kind of go down a list of what I thought were some of the board's comments from last time. There wasn't a direct correlation to the continuance to any particular item. So if I missed something, please let me know. First of all, I'll start out with that we're revealing 2/3 of the rear facade. I don't know if any of you actually looked at the giant research that we did on the structure and saw that the addition that is there is from 1996. The original historic one was probably half the depth of that, which is in keeping with the Sanborn maps and cadastral maps as well. One thing we did was to move the mass of this to the back of the site to where it appears as though that line of sight, that line of continuity looks as though it's a carriage house and everything else. We meet all the standards, and I I thank Kelly and Caitlin for, and the rest of the staff for being so thorough on this. I want to address the height. I know there was something brought up at the last meeting about the height being different. I think some of the public mentioned that. We are slightly taller than the building next door. We're still well under the limit on that second story rear addition. We tried to use the golden section rather than Home Depot sizing to do our proportions on that. So that's where we ended up. I can walk you through that if you'd like, but that is why the building is slightly taller. The elevator location, I know that the public has mentioned something about why not put it inside the house. The Secretary of the Interior recommends the location that we have it at, the rear of the structure, so it's removable. It is not detrimental to the historic fabric of the building. And since this is a tax credit project, we're living by those Secretary of the Interior standards, which are more restrictive because they get into the interiors and the exteriors. As I said in the last meeting, I have a 100% approval rate going before them, and we feel very confident that this design will be approved for tax credits. Let's see next. The connector, some have called it a hyphen, some have called it other things. We've tried to mitigate the impact on the neighbor by pulling that connector that is visible from their yard, because they do have an addition that comes off of their structure, and that we're filling in that with glazing instead of a solid wall there. So there is visual continuity. It's impossible to see this from the street unless you're standing on a milk crate and really looking and craning your neck. I don't know if any of y'all went out and looked at it, but this, it almost shouldn't be discussed because it really is difficult to see. Another thing that we did kind of a figure ground map. And this may not be 100% accurate because we're using Google Map data that may or may not be completely correct. But what we did is we filled in, the site is in red here. We filled in the what they we call end conditions with orange and then mid-block conditions in blue. So this is that area of town. And then, you know, further zooming in on all the connections that are there in the neighborhood. So this is something that exists. It's allowed. It's not a wild idea. It's not alien, as some of the hyperbole might like lead you to believe. This is something that's been done historically. It's on the next block right over from us right here, if you look at Google Earth. And this building connects at the end. This one almost connects, which is why this isn't quite visible from the west. I'm trying to think of anything else that I'd like to cover here. One other item was the cornice was mentioned at the last meeting. Although that kind of falls into a gray area of personal preference, I believe that we did a study where we showed a version of this without that. So this was the previous iteration without the back enclosed porch on it, because we were unsure, once again, if we were to move the building or if there was just an issue with the sleeping porch design. And then here is a more simplified version of that with a simplified cornice. And I think it may require some sort of indention or line to help break up that upper mass a little bit above the windows, but we're amenable to making that change. It fits in with the neighboring building, which the neighboring carriage house, which is not contributing. You can see that here. Before I open things up for questions, I'd like to talk about the lanes and the flexibility of the Oglethorpe plan and the beauty in it. And the lanes are kind of the new frontier, okay? We've seen growth. We've seen large-scale development. The National Park Service in, 2018 had a review. I was in the office. I was a design director when that was written. The conversations were about large-scale buildings. They were about all these end-of-block conditions. This is mid-block. which is blocked off on one end and 90% blocked off on the other. I do not feel like this is would be noticed at all if, just like the one on the next block, if there were carriage houses along this. We did the indention for two reasons. We didn't want a blank wall next to our neighbor. And by having this light well on this side here, it allows us to put glazing, a percentage of glazing on that 3-foot setback, which allows for, even if the neighbors build a building, to have a light well. And, you know, there are plenty of light wells that exist in Savannah. They exist. I didn't go through all the research on that, but they do exist. So it, once again, it is not an alien element. And I will turn it over to the board for questions, please.
Does anyone have any questions for the applicant?
I have a couple, if I may, Woodfield. Can you go back to the plan?
Floor plan or site plan?
Floor plan. Okay, stop. Let's see, go up a bit more. Okay, this one.
Yes.
So you've got a stairway going up to this kitchen level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're saying that there's an indentation here where the X is.
Yes, that
so that's
is,
the building
that
making...
is set back from the property line, roughly 3.5-4 feet.
Okay. Have you got a fence along there?
There is a historic wall here that we're wanting to work with the neighbor to help protect. So we're going to design our foundations to cantilever and save that wall. And also by pulling this off, it kind of allows us to do that in a much more sensitive way. Another thing that we've done, which we could change, on the upper level, we do have roof over this rather than this just being open space. We felt like there was an issue with getting water out of that space if we did that. So by having it open, it didn't quite make sense. If we roofed it, then we wouldn't have as much water between the building and the wall right there. So we have open area here for this kind of setback. We have open area here and then open area here.
But you're saying the open area is just an indentation in the wall. It's something that goes all the way up.
The walkway continues across here. So it's a thin sliver at that upper level. So I can go to the elevation of it. Let's see. All right. So this is from the east. There's just basically a line across here from the east. And then on the west, there's just a floor system going across. And this would be glazed. The reason we picked...
So the blue is the setback.
That is the setback, yes. Mm-hmm.
But there is a walkway in the middle part.
There's a walkway
and
in the
middle.
And
there's a walkway at the top. And then the gray is the neighbor's building. I'm just...
Yes. This know. Is the neighbor's
so
building
this is,
right
that,
here.
That's the addition.
That's okay. The addition. This is our current addition as it's shown. So this is really the area in question as far as the difference. So this is the existing building. We also did another quick study. Back out of this a little bit. We felt was a horrible idea, which is why we didn't explore it. If we were to do an addition on the back that met all the criteria, it would basically come all the way to here. We wouldn't have to ask for a variance for that. We just thought that was very insensitive. We're covering up the historic fabric of the existing historic building. And so we threw that one out immediately. You can see that here in what basically is a little sliver of light that could come through. So in essence, this is what the lot coverage allows there. And not that we're talking about lot coverage because we're talking about a lot of other things, but this is just a diagram to help y'all understand how breaking this up and using the kind of carriage house form and having a small connector right here helps mitigate this.
Okay, and then one other question. You know, it's very sort of complicated how you're playing with some of this massing. So on this elevation, these three big tall windows are actually an opening, correct? There's a 3-foot
setback. It's indented 3-foot setback, yes. Right. And that allows us to have glazing in that wall rather than a flat firewall there.
And that's for get around the fire restriction.
Yes.
Is the setback, but it also on the roof allows the deck to be recessed away from the property line.
It does, yes. Yeah. And it also helps with our lot coverage as well.
It helps with lot coverage.
Yes, because
so on the lower level, does that white light well go to the floor?
This goes all the way from the roof all the way down. Yes.
Okay. Can you show us that in plan, please?
You can see here, this is open, and that this is open on all 3 floors.
And can you get into that space to clean it and drain it? And
part of the plan was to have doors on that lower level that wouldn't be visible from the public right away. We had to turn this one around pretty quick. You know, we had 4.5 days. So the idea is to have access to that, but we had to kind of let the interior of the first floor and a few things ride just so that we could do the exterior field review. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for explaining it. It's sure. complicated. Thank you.
Right. Are any additional questions from the applicant?
One question that came up from what you just said, and that's if you put a, or if you enclosed the area that's under the little roof that you've got, the 3 foot, looks like about a 3 foot square thing, was the reason for leaving that open for the up to the level of the little bit of roof that we've got to just take it away from the square footage of the lot coverage?
Which section? The light well on this side or on the other side?
Other side.
The other side?
Yeah.
Okay.
That one up there, yeah.
Once again, we had to put a lot of stuff together, and there was a lot of debate in the office on what would be kind of the best thing here. And I think where we arrived, and it may not be represented in these drawings, is we arrived at having a much cleaner elevation by continuing this rail straight across and having a roof so that that water did not get down into that kind of interstitial space down below.
No, I understand. Understand why you did it. I'm just asking whether one of the considerations was to exclude that square footage from the lot coverage.
Currently it's counted in the lot coverage now.
It's currently covered, included in the 78% or 90%
yes,
or whatever.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. That's it.
Any additional questions? Hamer, looking at the plan we're on, or can you scroll up just to the first floor plan? So it looks like, I don't know if this is one of those things you were mentioning earlier that may have been missed, but the stair kind of dying in to the wall right there.
This right here?
Yes.
Okay, the stair works.
Uh-huh.
We have that worked out. We have enough distance here. We're trying to put winders in, and we had a 3 o'clock deadline, and we met it.
Okay.
So we have enough room there. It just didn't quite make it to the level of detail in Revit that we wanted to show. So it will have winders on the sides.
Okay. And so it works.
It will work. Yeah.
Within the footprint.
There was a lot of hand wringing on that and trying to get the stair to work, and we were trying to deal with the outside, but thanks for noticing.
Sure. And then second, looking at one of the kind of rendered perspectives, it looks like you're showing the cornice to be like a darker color. Is that the intent, or is it for it to match the stucco?
Currently the cornice.
Yes.
So if you look at the neighboring house, there's a similar dark cornice and dark window and dark trim mm-hmm. that we're kind of mimicking. We agreed that the white looked kind of dated and really didn't work with the two neighboring buildings on the front. So, like I said, we are open to that cornice changing a little bit and being lighter. I think in essence, and I'm going to say this out loud, we were kind of second guessing on what some of the public wanted to see. And so this cornice, I like it simple just as much as I like it like this. So, you know, we debated in the office whether or not to keep it, which is why we opted for the option here, you know, showing the more simple cornice on it.
So it would be metal or stucco?
So the larger one is made out of composite hardy material and painted. Okay. And then the smaller one would probably just be a metal cap.
Okay.
Just because that's...
This iteration would be a metal cap?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any additional questions?
Yes, I have a question. So that light well that you have going down at the 3-foot setback is open to the garage level when it gets to the garage level?
Yes.
Any additional questions? Okay. We will now go into public comment. I just want to remind everyone that you have 3 minutes to speak. And remarks should be addressed to the board and should be confined to the facts of the petition. I will first call Mr. Andrew Jones.
Right here, and all yours. It's right there.
So, okay, just the presentation. Okay. So, oh, okay. Yeah, it's the letter.
Yes.
Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. We vehemently oppose this project. We sent you a 13-page letter detailing all of our concerns. We hope you read it. First, please deny the variance request. The reason given about adjusting the building and having to have more lot coverage is ridiculous and has no relationship to the criterion for a variance. This proposal lies on a typical 20-foot wide lot resulting from the division of a standard 60-foot wide tithing lot into three equal portions. This is a typical lot size in the historic district. If you allow a variance for this standard 20-foot lot, how can you refuse to do so for hundreds of similar lots throughout the district? Since this lot is typical under the criteria, there are no what they call special conditions for this property. No special conditions. Therefore, under 3.21 of the ordinance, you shall recommend denial, S-H-A-L-L. A variance is not something to approve just because you feel okay about it. The applicant must prove it meets all 7 criteria, and you must consider each, make a finding on each under the ordinance. And if it fails one, you shall recommend denial. Now, the architect mentioned that the NPS was only concerned about buildings at the end. Well, that's interesting because in the illustration that they provided of a through lot building, it's a mid-block building. So that statement simply isn't true. For the arguments about the so-called connectors between townhouses and carriage houses, first of all, the ordinance doesn't use the term connector. That's just made up here. Moreover, the application is not for a connector between a townhouse and a carriage house. It is for an addition that runs through the lane. That's something completely different and has its own rules. But even if you look at this map of connectors, I mean, let's look at them. So I'm looking at the ones on Harris Street because the building form rule, which the MVC didn't even mention in their staff report, the building form rule requires you to look at just buildings along West Harris. And if you look at the one at the far right, guess what that connector is between the townhouse and a carriage house? That's the DeSoto Hilton. So how accurate do you think this map is? That's the DeSoto Hilton. This one here, that connector building, you know what that is? That's a garden wall. It's only one story tall. It is the remains of an old gas station. And the building that it is now part of is a townhouse with a separate carriage house. That's not a connector either.
What about 218 West Harris over on Tatnall Street? I visited it. I didn't see a connector. I've got aerial maps in the presentation. There's no connector there. So just because the applicant says these things are true doesn't mean that that's the case. The proposal features an exterior elevator, two-story spike wall.
Mr. Jones, will you please wrap up your comments,
yes,
please?
This proposal violates the Secretary of Interior standards, the design standards, the building form rule, which wasn't even addressed, and the visual compatibility criteria. Please deny this application. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Next, we have Ralph Anderson.
My name is Ralph Anderson. I live on East Hare Street, and my company is Savannah Restoration. I started that company in 1980, and I've been restoring historic houses for 42 years. I've never seen where we were able to connect the main house to the carriage house. Also, the elevator shaft, we've always had to either do an addition or put the elevator inside the building. I've never seen where you could just plant an elevator shaft on the back, visible from the street. But as I said last month, I have a 15-bedroom Airbnb next to me, and I would love to put a connector between a two-story connector to block that off. So if this is approved, I'd love to get Mike Rose to do one for me. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Next, we have Karen Mascarella.
Hello, good afternoon. I'm Karen Mascarella. I reside at 120 West Harris, and I'm here opposing 118 construction, the new construction. The impact it would be on our family would be financial and also the quality of life. The house that we have now is shared by a party wall, a shared roof line, and stucco. The financial ramifications could be astronomical for us. Not to mention the two-story structure that would obscure my view, the vegetation, and especially the sunlight. Can you imagine not having any sunlight in your courtyard? Pretty depressing. I think it's not very considerate for the neighbor to even suggest the structure. It will change the beauty of the neighborhood. We bought here in Savannah for the charm, the architecture, and because it was historic, and we do not want modern. So I don't understand all the details and the rules, but I know what is right from wrong. So I would like you all to ask yourselves, would you want a neighbor to build a fortress next door to your historic home? I think that your answer would be the same as mine, is no. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, I'll call Roy Mascarella.
Good afternoon. It's Ray Mascarella, and as you know,
I apologize.
My wonderful wife, Karen. We share a party wall. This project directly impacts us. We're not a neighbor down the street. So for that reason, Madam Chairman, I'd like to request equal time, 10 minutes to respond, just like the applicant had. May I have that 10 minutes?
You will have 3 minutes, like everyone else in the public.
The applicant has the burden to show that its design complies with all the criteria set forth in the ordinances. And this board, as a quasi-judicial body, has the obligation to hold them to that burden. And if they fail to produce the proper evidence to meet that burden, their project can't be saved by a positive staff recommendation, because that's not staff's role. And this board, as a matter of law, must deny the petition. Now, Mr. Jones has filed a letter of objection on behalf of the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I adopt every point, I adopt every argument, and I join in every argument that he made here as my own argument, my own evidence. There was some mention as to what the National Park Service said about, you know, running buildings. I mean, we're deja vu all over again. We have a building runs from the street to the lane. And I want to read what the Park Service actually said. It says this is the 2018 report. Likewise, much of the growth that has occurred in the district has been in the open space between the buildings and their corresponding lanes. often the only undeveloped area on many lots. This has led to many building to had led many to build additions in these spaces for living space and the integration of elevators. The greatest culprit has been those additions which connect street-facing residences with their carriage house. This interrupts the house, courtyard, carriage house rhythm and the east-west side lines of continuous courtyards visible from north-south connector streets. Has nothing to do with being limited to large buildings on lanes. This design is exactly what the Park Service told us not to do. And more important, that comment or that guideline is actually codified in our code. If you look at section 7.8.9E, it says the relationship of a building or structure to the open space between it and the adjacent buildings or structures shall be visually compatible with open spaces between contributing buildings and structures to which it is visibly related. The applicant hasn't pointed out a single three-story townhouse in Pulaski Ward, much less visible from 118, that has an addition that runs
Mr. from... Mr. Maskrell, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up your comments, please.
An addition that runs from the house to the lane. That is exactly what they told us not to do. That's exactly what they're doing. I only have 3 minutes, so I can't make any further comment, but I respectfully request that you deny the application for the reasons I've cited and all the reasons Mr. Jones said.
Thank you. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Yes, still Kevin Rose. I want to read the same paragraph. I was in that office. We talked about it every day. We talked about large-scale development. We talked about issues. The photo that Mr. Jones showed was an exhibit. It wasn't meant to be the end-all, be-all photograph. The upper one, yes. The lower one, no. So going back to that, let's see if I can find it. The greatest culprit in red has been those additions which connect street-facing residences to their associated carriage houses. This interrupts the house, courtyard, carriage house rhythm and east-west sight lines of continuous courtyards visible from the north-south collector streets. This is about an end condition. That's the nuance here that we're talking about. I was there. We had this conversation in the office, not specifically about this, but the next paragraph talks about other prominent buildings that have not honored the plan, which would be the GSA buildings, you know, and the bathroom tiled buildings and all these other DeSoto Hilton, things like that. DeSoto Hilton's a little differently because historically that site was for training and had different buildings on it before the original hotel was built. But I'm just trying to get across that here we are. We're presenting something that we're going for tax credits on. We're opening up a lot of the fabric of the historic structure. We're taking 68% of it back into the visual right away. We're also restoring the whole building, going back to a single family. And the owner would like to not have to go outside to go to their kitchen. It's pretty simple. I mean, we can't open that up. So we've chosen glass as a connector. It will not look heavy. It will be set back from the property roughly 4 feet on the west and 10, 12 feet on the east. I just want to say that I was spending some time in the square and I was looking at William J's wonderful building right over here, and the Owen Thomas house was Regency style, which was crazy at the time. We had, you know, original colonial style. We had, you know, movements through Georgian, which we have the pink house, which is one of the last kind of bastions of that left after the fire. But William J. was looked at with disbelief when he was bringing neoclassical, you know, Regency style to Savannah. And I'm not comparing myself to that. And what I'm trying to say is I've stood here and I've been back there in the audience, and Mr. Jones presented his house. This board was chastising for using different periods. He wanted to mix and match with porches and things. I was here for that. I don't think any of y'all, maybe Tom, I don't know if you were, but it finally got passed, but things changed, right? So with that being said, I would hate to think that the amount of vitriol and everything that happens in this place from the public would have stopped a lot of William Jay's projects back in the day. And I'm not comparing this to that. I'm just saying David Lynch said negativity is the enemy of creativity. And I want to see Savannah have a timeline that is not stopping at a certain point, that it grows. Many of you, I believe, feel the same way. I feel like the architects on the board feel like you'd like to be able to see things from the 21st century get built. And this isn't a crazy modern design. We have one small little 8-foot section of glass that we're really talking about here. The rest of it is negligible. And I do understand the neighbors' concerns. I do understand that. But in closing, it's allowable. It is not unusual. And this project meets the standards. And that's what we're here to talk about, not personal preference, which is what y'all talked about at the beginning of the meeting. So thank you.
Thank you. At this time, we will now go into board discussion. No further comments will be accepted. I will start with you, Mr. Helms.
I have several comments. First, I think it's hearsay what was being talked about in 2018 in a meeting somewhere in Washington, D.C., and not exactly relevant to us. If we are, in fact, a judicial body, then our role as judges is to apply the law, in this case, the ordinances, to the projects that are being put in front of us, not to reinterpret those, not to decide that those laws, that the ordinances say something that they don't. In fact, in this instance, therefore, the staff is actually acting in an administrative capacity and not almost like a prosecutor in a case. And so therefore their comments are really no different from the comments of the plaintiff or from the applicant or the members of the public. I don't quite see that we're doing that in this case. And that's my fundamental problem with this particular application. And that's really all I have to say.
Mr. Coleman?
Yes, I really don't have any problem with the architecture on the project, but I do have a major problem with the request for a variance. I do not feel that there's a hardship that creates this need to allow a variance on this project. The design should meet the 75%. Once you open that door on these small lots, to allow a variance of this type, it will be requested by many other people. And this is a constraint of this property that needs to be respected by the ordinance. So other than that, I really don't have any problems with the project, but I can't support any variance for lot coverage.
Mrs. Woodfield?
No comments at this time.
Mr. Thompson?
Well, each of us as board members come to the job with a different philosophy and understanding what that job is. So we each do our thing. I don't have a problem with the design, but I tend to agree with Mr. Coleman that the amount of the variance could at least be reduced from what the proposal is. But in general, this whole comment about the use of the space in people's lots is real estate's very valuable downtown, and the owners have rights. And if there's an opportunity to improve their property, that is their right to do within the context of the historic district standards and so on. And so with that, I agree with the staff recommendation for the design, and that perhaps the I guess the variance comes with the design, so but perhaps that could be looked at as a condition of the approval and how they could modify that but still maintain the basic design. Rambling.
Ms. Hamer?
I agree with what my board members have to say. Just to start off, I do think that this iteration is much more successful from a visual compatibility standpoint from the alleyway. I think that this iteration does maintain the wall of continuity that we want to see from the streets and the lanes. So I think this design successfully integrates that visual compatibility standard that the previous designs didn't. And then, however, I also agree with my fellow board members that I have a hard time finding a variance necessary for this instance of a project where we are, you've provided the same massing of this addition at the rear to kind of reflect the adjacent carriage house, which I think is successful. However, there isn't precedent. There's precedent for needing space for a car in the Oglethorpe plan and having a space large enough for that, but there isn't necessarily precedent for having to be able to connect those spaces. To a lot of the public comments, looking at the visual compatibility concerns with the rhythm of structures. So that standard, I'm interpreting that standard, the title is rhythm of the structures on the streets. So I'm interpreting that as the spaces between structures as they sit on the streets, not the spaces between the structures on the individual lots themselves. So given that, I feel like that standard is met on this project because it is maintaining that wall of continuity on the front elevation and the rear elevation. I do understand there is concern about building up to the lot line, and I understand that it's not ideal, but when you do live in an urban condition, that is a consequence that there can be properties built up to the zero lot line. And I guess, yeah, just to circle back, I agree with staff's recommendations on visual compatibility. However, I do not think a variance, it meets the requirements for a variance.
Okay, we will go around for a second time. Mr. Helms?
I actually like this design better than the previous design. Having said that,
sir, your microphone is off. Your microphone.
All right.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. This design is more successful, certainly from the view of the lane. My objections to it, I certainly don't agree with a variance, and I still don't think that this board is applying the ordinances as strictly as arguably they should. That's it.
Mr. Coleman?
No further comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
Thank you. I feel this is a much more successful design than we've seen before. I like the keeping the carriage house rhythm from the lane, open space in the middle. I am concerned about the impact of this two-story plus a walkway right on a property line with a neighbor. I think that impact should be looked at to see if you can diminish it. And part of that can be worked into reducing the actual mass of the addition and the connector so that you don't need the variance. I agree with my fellow board members that the variance is a privilege and it's not a necessity here, that there are ways that you could and should work around that, and we shouldn't break our own rules to give a variance in this case. I do think the connector should have a little less impact and that the variance should be taken off the table. But I do appreciate that now we have more the considerable carriage house rhythm that's important to keep for the city.
Mr. Thompson.
No further comment.
Ms. Hamer. No further comment. We will now entertain a motion. Public comments have been closed. Sir, what is your name? Sir, may I please have your name? Sir, may I please have your name? May I please have your name?
My name is Richard Padder, P-A-D-D-O-R. I reside at 218 East Jones Street.
Yes, your name was called. Your name was called.
I'm just telling you, this is my second meeting here. I was approved for my
if we are going to allow him to speak, we want him to speak in the microphone.
The gallery is so poor, we can't hear the colors of the members of the board, which is important. And I'd like to be heard for 30 seconds on this petition.
So you were wanting to speak on, okay, I will give you your 30 seconds if that's what you would like.
Thank you. Again, my name is Richard Padder, P-A-D-D-O-R, 218 East Jones Street. I've served 10 years as a chair of the Preservation Committee in Los Angeles. And I think this deal with the connectors and applying for a variance in order to get that approved is a little bit of a bridge too far. Because I could just see this board hearing nothing but connectors in the next 5 or 10 years. If this precedent is allowed, I don't care how it's articulated. The third floor was open. There could be music, entertainment, and it would be a nuisance to the neighbors. I'll yield any time left to anybody else.
Thank you. The board will now go into a motion. Entertain a motion.
Or
can we vote on the variance first? Right. Yeah. Okay. Yes, Mr. Rose, you can return. You can respond.
No, I'm still Kevin Rose, and what I'd like to say is, I hear what the public has to say. Once again, I still stand by the fact that this connection happens all over town. And my former boss, Jerry Lominack, lives in one of the houses that I designed the connector on. It's over on Liberty Street, right next to St. Vincent's Academy. And I just want to clear that up, that this does exist. I designed it probably in 91. And I would also like to just reiterate that We're good with dropping the variance if the board does so move. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. We will now entertain a motion.
The issue is, how do we deal with the fact we've got two different recommendations? How do we deal with the fact we've got two different recommendations? We've got a recommendation that staff, and then staff is also recommending a variance.
Well, you can approve the staff recommendations and you can deny the variance, correct?
Yes, you've got a choice. You can approve the staff recommendation for the project and deny the variance. That's not a problem. It's done all the time.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Wouldn't that be problematic if the design is incumbent on the variance, however?
In the past when that has happened, the applicant has come up with a very similar design to meet, to be within the current standards, that the zoning allows. So, if the issue is lot area coverage, I think, what's the variance for again? I'm sorry. For lot area coverage, that's what I thought. Then the applicant can make changes to, the building in order to meet that without impacting the design, substantially. Would that be a correct statement, Mr. Rose?
Yes.
So therefore you could basically approve, make a motion to approve the, proposed design subject to it meeting the, current zoning criteria that's in place regarding lot area coverage.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, could I just make a request? Robert, bring your microphone down to your mouth when you're speaking. Because, you know, even I have hearing aids.
I normally try to get it down there, but I don't always remember to push the button twice.
And Mr. Coleman, if I may, you can have it come back to staff to approve the.
Yes, thank you. Because my point was with this being where it is, I would be uncomfortable with allowing it to proceed, even with the reduction to the lot coverage, without having a chance to see it from a board standpoint. I think that wouldn't be fair to the public.
That's up to you. You can either do it where you would like to see it come back to you, or we could approve that, that reduction as long as it meets the current standards, at staff level. But either way, it would be looked at. And anytime someone is in disagreement with comments that the staff, reviews, they can always bring it back up to the full board.
Thank you for that clarification.
Using that as a basis, this is Helms, I would propose the following motion, that I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review continue the petition of 118 West Harris Street, 25-003528 COA, until the next meeting on November, whatever it is, in order for the applicant to redesign the proposal to, bring the lot coverage down to 75%. And I further move that the board deny, the approval of the, variance, coverage for lot from above 75%.
Do I have a second?
Coleman, second.
Okay. So the motion is to continue until the November 12th meeting. Is that the correct date? Okay. Concerning the bringing the lot coverage down to 75% and then denying, I didn't get the
last. Denying the requested variance to more than 75% for lot coverage.
Just for clarification, because you indicated redesign, I want to make the, I'm assuming for the architect it's here, that if you're okay with the design, it would be up to him to fit whatever is currently,
I agree. I think that the point is to bring it back to the board, not.
That's fine. I'm just dealing with it for clarification, because when you say redesign, it could mean a lot of stuff to a lot of people. So I just want to make it very clear. This architect, and his client has been back before this board on a number of occasions. So I want to be as clear as possible. So therefore, if Mr. Rose brings this back with, the current design, how fitting within the lot area coverage, which is 75 square feet, that is what you would like to see at the November 12th meeting.
That's possibly stretching it. That's probably what I think. But what we really would like is to have another crack to look at it once he's done that.
And then denying the variance. Okay.
Well, point of clarification, I guess I'm more in line with what the director said, that I want to see it come back in front of us, even if it's the exact same design, it fits within the 75%. And then we can make a determination from there. But I don't think we're asking him to redesign the project. If it needs to be redesigned to meet 75%, that's on him. But if not, then he brings his best thing here that meets that 75% and not have us take a whole nother run through this. I don't think that's fair to the architect, but I do feel it's important that the public gets a chance to come here and take a look at it, meeting the 75%.
Okay. Helms, I'm in complete agreement with that statement.
Okay. So we will enter a vote. Helms?
Aye.
Coleman?
Aye.
Woodfield?
Aye.
Thompson?
To the extent I understand the motion, aye.
Hamer?
Aye.
Ayes have it. Okay, we will move on to, let's see, petition of Felder Associates, Kat Sinclair, 25-004-529-COA, 250 Bull Street, exterior alterations.
Good afternoon, Jody Brown presenting 250 Bull Street. Located on the northeast corner of Bull and Liberty Streets in the Anson Ward, the subject property is four stories and was constructed in 1856. Hold on. There it is. The first story has long been commercial. While the 1916 Sanborn map show the building is entirely residential, by 1953, there are three stores on the first floor. Originally designed with windows similar to and in line with the upper floors per the 1936 historic photos, sometime prior to 1979, the windows were enlarged. Now the space functions as one commercial space. The exterior of the first floor is sheathed in a modern stucco finish, and the first floor commercial extends past the four-story building to this two-story building fronting on Bull Street. It is listed as a contributor to the district, and the proposed alterations would include replacing an existing non-historic window with a door, replacing an existing door with a window, replacing existing storefront windows in kind, stucco repair, which would include the removal of the decorative stucco lines around the entrance around at the corner, and exterior lighting. The awnings and signage will be listed under a separate review. Staff recommends approval at the request to make exterior modifications to the property at 250 Bull Street with the following conditions, that the 6/6 double hung window, which is located on the Liberty Street facade, shall be repaired. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for staff?
Woodfield, I just wanted to clarify. I think you mentioned earlier that the awnings and the light fixtures were not approved in this package. Is that correct?
Thank you for asking that question. The light fixtures are part of this package. They're little goldish, bronzish sconces with a gooseneck. They're essentially located in between the different window openings, window door openings. The awnings and the signage will be part of a different review.
Thank you.
Are there any additional questions for staff?
Helms, have you approved the color?
I didn't have a problem with the color, but I know that during the pre-meeting, there was some concern about the color from Commissioner Woodfield.
Are there any additional questions for staff? Okay. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
There she is.
Hello, everyone. I am Catherine Sinclair with Felder & Associates. I am here on the behalf of the Daniel Reed Hospitality Group. They are looking to open up a small tapas restaurant at this location, the 250 Bull Street. We have the doors and the windows are being requested to be replaced. And then to address the color as well, We are hoping to go for something with this greenish tone. I know that on the screen it sometimes looks a little bit more intense or saturated than what it actually is, but we're happy to provide any swatch colors or anything like that if that is necessary. For the doors and the windows that we are asking to be replaced, this is on the Bull Street facade. Currently, this door is on the corner, and that serves as the primary entrance for the building. We would like to continue that use and just restore, repair the stucco that is around that door. Going to the left here, these non-historic windows will be repaired or replaced in kind as necessary, as with this double bay here as well. This new door right here would be it's completely within an existing opening. We are asking for this door. It would be key to the function of the business that would go in here. This would act as the service door for the kitchen. This window would be, repairs would be done as necessary. And then on the very corner right here, there is an existing door. We would ask to replace that with a window. Currently there is a,
Do you have the, our other, our presentation or our submittal form?
In theory.
So that corner door that is existing has a great deal of water damage, as there is an existing downspout right on the corner of that building. So water does tend to pool at that door. The owner is hoping to replace that with a window, so that way we don't have any additional water entering the building in that location. So this photo right here, you can see the downspout, the red downspout right there, and then this is where the water tends to pool. So we are asking that this door be replaced with a window, which prevent any further damage. And then this existing window that is in the middle bay would become the new service door for the kitchen. And then for a floor plan, you could see it right here. This area is proposed to be dining seating, and then the kitchen would fit in this back bay right here. So there's no space to use this door, and if they were to maintain this door, it's already causing a great deal of water damage. So we're hoping to mitigate that situation with adding this new door right here. Any questions?
Yes, Mr. Thompson.
What kind of restaurant did you say it was going to be?
They're opening up a tapas restaurant.
Tapas, okay.
Yes, all right. Sir.
I see you have lots of seats around the bar.
Yes.
Important, right?
Yes, very important. They're going to be serving small bite type items. So it is a commercial kitchen, but it is on the smaller side.
Are there any additional questions?
Woodfield, just want to clarify that the service, you're calling it a service door for the kitchen. It really is going into the dining room and it's glass. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. That's correct.
Yeah.
It would be replacing, or it would match the existing doors in kind.
Okay. And then the windows that are in the kitchen are intended to be glass so people can look into the kitchen?
Yes, ma'am.
Perfect. Thank you.
Are there any additional questions from the board? Okay. I do not have any public comment cards. So we will go into board discussion. Oh.
May I ask one more question, please? I'm sorry, because I was concerned about the color and then I guess the awning. So I'll just bring that out. You know, depending on which computer screen you see this on,
the color is different, but we will be looking for something that's compatible with the building above. It's a historical building. It's got a beautiful, rich terracotta color. So the, you know, this needs to be compatible, complementary, and some of the screens are making it look very olive and jumping out. So I think we'll look carefully at the color and we'll want to have a color swatch so we know for sure what it is.
Of course, yeah. Completely understandable. Our intent is to use a warm, almost neutral green that will complement the existing brick of the building above, as well as the stone stairs that go into the second floor commercial building that's on Liberty as well. And we understand the need for swatches for the colors. I will say that while the canopies are not included in this submission, we have provided a neutral beige tone as our selection, so that way you can see the green against the neutral canvas as well.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Okay. Well, since there's, I don't have any comment cards from the public, we will go into board discussion. Ms. Hamer, comment? Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
Again, I think the design is nice. I like keeping the existing windows and sense of a streetscape, something to look at. I would just be careful about the color, as I mentioned, and also that transition at the corner where you have the awning and the awning stops and you're turning around the corner and you're doing a step down with the green color, it's a little tricky, and be nice to pay attention and be sure the bottom wraps around the corner and to the stairs on the other side. Thank you.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Mr. Helms?
My only comment, I like the changes being proposed. I also have a bit of a question about the color. I would actually like to see the color come back as part of the awnings submission, which I presume will happen pretty much post-haste.
Okay, I will not go around again. we would like to now entertain a motion.
Yeah, I think it's on. Okay, Thompson, I move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review approve the petition of Elder Associates Catherine Sinclair, modifications to the storefront at 250 Bull Street, with the following conditions to be submitted and approved by staff prior to starting the project. To the following condition, that the 6'6" double hung window on Liberty Street facade be repaired, and the further condition that the color be returned with the awnings to look at as a package versus the building separately from the awning.
Okay, do I have a second?
Helm, second.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve, which was made by Thompson, with approval with the condition set forth the 6'6" double hung windows on Liberty Street facade shall be repaired, and for them to come back with the color approval for the awnings and the lower color of the building. Okay.
Is that a continuance? It's approval.
It's approval with the condition that they.
Okay.
Yes. Helms.
Aye.
Coleman.
Aye.
Woodfield.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Hamer.
Aye.
Okay. Ayes have it. We will now move on to the petition of Five Quarter Architecture, Ryan Klaus, 250044 78 COA, 502 East River Street, new construction, parts 1 and 2.
Good afternoon again, Jody Brown presenting 502 East River. The applicant is proposing to construct a new single-story building on the north side of River Street. The building will be between lots, wharf lots 4 and 5 east of Lincoln Street between two larger single-story open-air markets. The building would be 458 square feet and will consist of a 255 square foot kitchen and an attached men's and women's restroom accessed from the exterior. This review includes both parts 1 and 2. The proposed building is located between two non-contributing buildings. It is subordinate to them and recessed from their front facades. Directly across the street is a two-story commercial building that is also listed as a non-contributor. The nearest contributor is located at 402 through 410 East Bay Street, directly across the street from the parking lot to the west. Given the proposed location, the surrounding and surrounded by non-contributing resources and its diminutive size, the building will have limited impact on the historic character of the district. The overall height of this building is 17 feet 10 inches with a plate height of 11. Per the height map, 2 stories is allowed in this area, so it's well under that. While the building does not achieve the exterior expression of 14 feet 6 inches on the storefront, it is not multi-story. It was designed to be a small structure akin to the shed structures to the east of the warehouse-style buildings. Staff finds that given the design, the structure meets the standards. The project is designed with glazing on the east, south, and west facades. It appears that the standard requiring 55% is met and was confirmed by the applicant to be 56.4% for the front, which is the south facade that fronts on the river. The proposed exterior materials and my Vanna white will float those around consist of true exterior for siding and forgive me because I can't pronounce this, Versatex for the trim, Arcadia aluminum sliding windows for the windows, metal clad doors, the standing seam metal for the roof, and wood for the knee brackets and the railing and screening of the bathroom. The applicant provided samples, which you're looking at now, for the various materials. they've not been readily used, from my understanding, in Savannah's historic districts. The true exterior siding is a composite blend of 70% fly ash and 30% polymer resin. As the feel and kind of appearance of woodish, it is neither allowed nor prohibited in the current ordinance. However, staff feels that the material is acceptable. The Versatex material, on the other hand, kind of feels and looks plasticky. The sample provided by the applicant is shiny and staff is concerned about any longevity of paint on it. Staff would recommend an alternative material be used for the trim. Based on all of this information and additional information provided in the staff report, staff recommends approval of the request to construct a single-story building on the north side of River Road located at 502 East River Street with the following conditions: that the trim work uses a material that is closer in appearance to wood rather than Versatex, and that the applicant confirms the storefront has a glazing of 55% glazing. I will note that after the staff report came out, the applicant did provide the trim work of the true exterior to be used in lieu of the Versatex. I'm just going to kill that word every time. And that the glazing was confirmed to be 56.4% and over the 55%. Oh, and I should flip through. Sorry.
Are there any questions for staff? Okay. Would the petitioner like to come forward? Please state your name for the record.
Hello, I'm Ryan Claus with Five Quarter Architecture. Thank you all for your time, for your review, and Jody for all your help. The Versatex is omitted, so I am proposing a product that matches the siding. It's essentially a cementitious product, kind of like Hardy is made up of Hardy plank or Hardy board. But the Versatex is out of the picture, so we are proposing that same cementitious product for all the trim and siding elements. as well as the pilasters and anything else that looks, that appears like wood. It'll last longer, hold up to the elements, and it is all paintable as well. So, I think that's all I have to clarify, but if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer any of them.
Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner?
Woodfield, would you mind putting up the renderings or elevations or something so we can look at that together?
Okay. Yep.
Could you please scroll down to the, so we understand the front of this is the ice cream area and then this slatted area at the back.
Correct. So yeah, sort of the massing of this element here is the ice cream shop itself. Just quickly, this is the ordering window. You'll have two lines where you could order from. You go around each side to the pickup window on whichever side you ordered from. The rear structure back here is sort of, a more, indescript, I guess, restroom structure, which we purposely broke the roof line and we're trying to diminish that element a little bit. So we open up some more views to the river. We don't want as large of an overhang for the roof. You can see it back here. So we just wanted to keep that as simple as possible and keep sort of this parapeted structure with the awning more prevalent and kind of being celebrated. So there, that was the purpose. We also don't need the large overhang over this space. And it also just keeps the back area open for patrons and guests. So, yeah, does that answer your question or direct accordingly?
I just find that there's a disconnect between the roof over the very elaborate ice cream area and then the, again, this just kind of tacked on room at the back. And it's also, if you look at the side view, remember, these are open markets where people go in and out and they do see the side of these markets. It's not just something you'll see from the street. So if you see the side view of this, how the roof gets truncated.
That's true. And we definitely don't want to carry the elaborate awning over the top of that to carry that entire expression across. It's really unnecessary in our minds. We'd be open to looking at, you know, the siding. I could see that being a paneled structure, and I think it would add to the elaborateness of that sort of addition piece, which would be more in keeping with the, you know, the detailing on the ice cream shop itself. And we're happy to study that. Again, it was more about the visual as you're standing back there that we didn't have, you know, as you're walking through here, you'll be able to still see the sky and the river beyond. If we carry the awning across, you know, if you carry the line down here, you're really cutting off the sky even further and the views to the river. So it's more of the experience of the space, where we just didn't feel, we felt like it was appropriate. The roof lines still correspond to one another, you know, in this elevation. All the roof pitches matching, and it also gives us the opportunity to drop some scuppers and get water off of that roof on the taller piece. So it wasn't a mindless add-on. It was done with purpose. And again, I think if it would help, we'd be happy to dress this elevation and the side of the elevations up by omitting the siding and using the paneled look in lieu of that. The reason we kind of pushed away from paneling is because it's not really promoted. We're proposing it in a way where we're using like a tongue and groove material with a V groove. So it's not just blank paneling, but it's, or recessed paneling, but it's actually tongue and groove boards within it, which to our understanding is acceptable. So again, we'd be happy to add that there. That adds more detail to it if you guys would wish.
Again, my issue is that you've kind of got a three-sided roof here that then you've just cut off. I mean, what if you completed your roof at the ice cream area and then you'd have a simpler time adding this shed structure at the back?
Right.
But you have this very elaborate roof that you've cut off.
Agreed. And there's also...
I find that you've got like two things you've just...
put together without them being gracefully married.
Sure. I totally hear that point of view. Absolutely. There's also a sort of a gray area between roof and awning. You know, this is more of an awning on the facade of a building, which those would be segmented in some way. So it was approached with that in mind as well, that it wasn't supposed to be the primary roof to continue around the entire, predominant structure itself, but more that it was an accent piece, a heavier accent piece, but something that we felt it was okay to break at that point. And I think, and I'd be happy to pull a rendering too to give a better look of it. But I understand and I welcome everybody else's thoughts on that as well, for sure.
Are there any additional questions?
Yes, I'd like to interject into that commentary. And I think I agree with your direction on those pieces because they're really subservient to the importance of the ice cream pavilion. But maybe one of the ways to address a concern is if you go back to the side elevation, the maybe making the height of those of that section a little taller will help change proportion. Mm-hmm. I think the proportion of it looking a little squat makes it really, it looks really out of place. And I think that's what's being picked up on. So without really changing roof size or shapes or anything, just the height might help you accomplish what you're trying to achieve and still make that subservient to the main pavilion you have there. Cause I think it works, mm-hmm. but I do feel that almost looks like an afterthought put on. So
yeah.
You do want it to be a service building that's not as important, but maybe increasing the height might help. Take care of the concerns there.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Okay, well, I do not have any comment cards, so we will enter board discussion. Ms. Hamer?
I agree with what a few of my fellow board members previously said. I do think that that rear portion is kind of less cohesive to the overall design. And I feel like, especially at the Riverwalk, we want to make sure we're activating it from a 360-degree perspective, not just on the River Street side, but on the Riverwalk side too. And during the pre-meeting, we discussed, you know, maybe that could just be like a mural or something just to enliven that rear space, but it does feel a little disconnected back there. And then, I guess, secondly, just what I meant to ask during board or questions is just concerned with where the water's being directed, if it's just sheet draining off of that shed portion, or if it is being routed somewhere else is something to consider. Thank you.
Mr. Thompson?
Well, I can agree with some of the comments I've heard. It's a matter of going back and redesigning it, I think, either making the restrooms taller so you don't see them like we do in the front view, or kind of like the idea, although I'm sure that's not cheap, extending the roof line is around most of the over most of the ice cream area over the top of the restroom, so it all becomes more integrated that way. So that would be my comment at this point.
Ms. Woodfield?
I think I've given you my comments on that, but would you mind putting up the elevation of the two buildings and the ice cream pavilion in the middle? From face on with the pavilions on the side. There's one elevation that shows the height of the pavilions on the side.
Yeah, I think that's actually in the other package. Let me pull that up for you.
I'll just say in the meantime that I do think, you know, we have a very famous, busy river, and you could consider the backside of these bathrooms as a view to the river. And someone mentioned putting the ice cream sign on the back of that building. She said mural, but I don't think you should just say this is only a riverfront, river street elevation, that there is the river and people and the boat parades and this and that. So from this elevation, to me, I think I at least am pleased. I think this will be a bit fantasy or Disneyland or, you know, an interesting, enlivening building here. But I think it could be lowered if you look at the scale of the person, and it's, I think, 11 feet to the top of that ice cream sign. And maybe if you lowered it, then that would help you integrate the bathroom. But I do think you need the front of the building to somehow encompass and engage the back building and not just try to marry the two together. Thank you.
Mr. Coleman.
No additional comment.
Mr. Helms.
I think this is a good idea, and I have no comment.
Okay. We will, since there are, sure.
I do want to absolutely establish that the owner here is trying to engage the actual river itself. He owns the strip of property here. It's very important to him that he looks at this in the 360 view. And then we don't just put a blank wall up there. I love those ideas of signage or murals. I would be opposed to pulling the whole awning down. The heaviness of those brackets, and we get into ADA issues as well for clearance to walk by. So because they're curved and kind of delicate and, you know, attractive, if we pull those down, it'll all have to kind of shrink, and then the building also gets squatty, which I don't think proportionally is going to look right with more of the verticality we have. Also, the open-air structures, while they're bigger and heavier in there, I think the heaviness of them, that balances out with the higher eave height that we have. But they're also not contributing. Again, I just think it's a fine composition between them all. I feel like there's one more. I think I'll leave it at that, but please consider that we don't reduce the design and sacrifice things that are attractive here by simply trying to, you know, reduce height. The windows get squattier. Everything kind of squishes down from there, and I don't think that's the approach we want to take with a structure like this on Roof Street. Thanks.
Thank you. We will now enter a motion. Anyone?
I will make a motion. You could put the pertinent facts up there for me, Jody. I'd like to make a motion to continue the project at 502 East River Street, 25004478 from Five Quarter Architecture for a new pavilion on River Street, keeping the conditions that are here, the trim work that uses a material that is closer in appearance to wood rather than Versatex, and that the applicant confirms that the storefront is 55% glazing, which I think he's confirmed, but also to continue it so that the front part of the building and the back part of the building can be more visually compatible with each other.
Do I have a second?
Coleman will second.
Okay, the motion is to continue the application, keeping the condition that the trim work uses material that is closer in appearance to wood rather than Versatex, and that the applicant confirms that the storefront has 55% glazing, and that the front and back are more visually compatible. And the second was made by Coleman. Helms, how do you vote?
Aye.
Coleman?
Aye.
Woodfield.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Amer.
Aye.
Amer, sorry. The ayes have it. We will now move on to petition of Architecture 101, Sophia Rodriguez, 25004530COA, 512 Berrien Street, rehabilitation and alterations.
Thank you. This is Caitlin again. The applicant is requesting approval for rehab and alterations of the property at 512 Berrien Street. The proposed scope of work includes stucco installation over the existing CMU, reopening currently infilled windows to restore original fenestration pattern, adding new windows and replacement doors, a roof replacement, a new steeple installation and alteration of the front door surround, and with that alteration, the removal of the ADA ramp and installation of a new sloped walkway. So 512 Berrien Street was built circa 1953 and is a non-contributing resource within the National Historic District as well as the Savannah Downtown Local District. The building currently functions St. Luke's, has always been a church, and no changes in use is being proposed. The church building is a CMU structure surrounded by various commercial and residential buildings, including the Frogtown Apartments and the former Chatham Pipe and Plumbing Supply Company. So just some neighborhood context here. The applicant provided some historical information and found an aerial photo from the 1950s showing there was a steeple on this church building. So as a monumental building, it is a smaller scale of standards that are applied. So for monumental buildings, they comply with visual compatibility and then a limited amount of design standards, which includes streets and lanes, height, setbacks, mechanical equipment and refuse, lighting, parking and paving and fences, trellises and walls. So not all of those apply in this case, but staff reviewed it applying the ones that did. And also for the record, a monumental building as defined per the ordinance is an institutional building such as a place of worship, governmental building, school or institution of higher learning with the primary use as education, a theater or museum having special or unique form because of the nature of its use. So for visual compatibility, staff found the height of the proposed modest steeple inclusion will remain visually compatible. It's a lot of non-contributing resources in the surrounding area, but we still felt this was an appropriate addition scale-wise. The inclusion of the steeple and slight expansion of the front entry area will be in proportion to what is seen on small church buildings of the mid-century and is appropriate. It will not be a disruption to the contributing buildings to which it is visually related. Just kind of go through some of the design and the demolition plan, which includes taking out the infill on those windows, placing them back, and then taking out that kind of front entry, taking out that ADA ramp and doors just to expand that a little bit. And some of the elevations. So again, staff found that, you know, using the criteria which was necessary for this, that these standards were met. It was visually compatible and met the standards and is recommending approval of this work with no conditions. Thank you. I'll take any questions.
Is there any questions for staff?
Okay. I hope this isn't because I wasn't listening carefully enough, but so that building had windows before?
Yes. They are,
What kind of use was it with that many windows?
It's always been a church. I think that at one point they just decided to infill them.
Oh, okay. Yeah, looks like it's going to be a nice project now.
Any other questions for staff? Okay. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Hi, I'm Sophia Rodriguez with Architecture 101. We are so excited about this project. Thank you, Caitlin. Thank you, staff, for helping me through this process and just being gracious the whole time. This church is in need of a little TLC, as you can see. In Frogtown neighborhood, I think we're just excited to give it the love I think it deserves. And Caitlin did a great job of summarizing, but I would love to, if you have any questions, answer them.
Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner?
I just have one, and it's maybe a silly one, but on the elevation, what is that? You have a bell up there? Is that a light that's attached to the?
It's open, yeah, like maybe a bell tower that maybe is in discussions with the clients and a budgetary option, but we'd like to keep it as steeple. Yeah, open air up there is what it is right now.
Okay, so the shape is it cut in the wall?
Yes,
so
ma'am.
It's open.
Yes, ma'am, from all sides, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions for the petitioner? Okay. Well, there are no public comment cards, so we will go into board discussion. Thank Helms?
Helms, no comment.
Coleman?
No comment.
Woodfield?
I'm glad you and your client are putting a little TLC here. It looks just like it belongs. I don't have any architectural or planning comments. Thank you.
Thompson?
Ditto to that, no comment.
Hamer?
I'd like to add to Ms. Woodfield that I think this is improving the visual compatibility of the previous structure, which is what we should strive to do for all of our projects. Thanks.
Okay, I will not go around a second time. We will now entertain a motion. Anyone?
I move that the board approve the proposed rehabilitation and alteration work for 512 Berrien Street, COA 25-004530, as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards.
Do we have a second?
Hamer, second.
Okay, the motion is to approve, was made by Helms and seconded by Hamer. Helms, how do you vote?
Aye.
Coleman?
Aye.
Woodfield?
Aye. Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Hamer?
Aye.
The ayes have it. Thank you. We will now move on to the last petition. It is petition of Homelime Architecture 25004653 COA 216 East Taylor Street Edition.
Thank you. This is Caitlin. The applicant is requesting approval to construct a small rear addition with a deck above 216 East Taylor Street. All proposed work will be located on the rear of the property and will only be minimally visible from the East Jones Lane right-of-way. It will be on an existing rear addition that was installed in the late 20th century. The scope of work includes constructing a one-story addition approximately 14 by 8 at the ground level of the rear facade. The stucco finish will match the existing house. Build a deck at the parlor level above the new addition featuring a black painted metal guardrail. A retractable canvas awning will be installed above the deck. And to replace the existing non-historic windows, transoms, and doors at both the ground and parlor levels of the rear facade with new units in kind, using materials and colors to match the existing. So just kind of go over the plans. And some of the elevations. This was something that staff looked into, and if you look at the Sanborn map, this is the latest update from 1973. You can tell that these were pretty much the same. And when you look at it now, you can really see, what's been changed and added onto. And the applicant did verify as well that all of this work is taking place on the, not historic addition portion here. So it's just really, truly an expansion going from that rather than obstructing any historic character of the building. The main building was built in 1854, obviously a contributing resource. It met the lot coverage standards, which the existing is 44.9, and the addition will bring it to 48.1%, so below the 75. For the Secretary of the Interior standards, the addition is on the rear and will be minimally visible. It is on the lower level and will not affect the historic character of the building, which is largely intact on the front of the building, whereas the rear elevation has experienced more alterations. Much of the work appears to be visually compatible and meet the standards, and so staff only had a few conditions where it was just getting the specifics for the products to be used, just some very slight things, which is why we would recommend approval with these conditions, just to verify the materials, so it'd be approved with the following conditions to be reviewed and approved by staff prior to the work being completed. So that would be just provide product and material specifications for stucco windows, doors, awning, and stone decking. Two, confirm that the windows will be inset at least 3 inches. And then the third is just update on the drawings to show the height and spacing of the metal railings are compliant. I have been conversing with the applicant since the time that this was written. They seem amenable to me and have met some of these already, but when the report's already gone out, we leave that to the petitioner presentation to allow that time for them. So I will gladly answer any questions or turn it over to them.
Are there any questions for staff? Okay. Would the petitioner please come forward, state your name for the record?
Good evening. My name is Eric O'Neill. I'm with Homeline Architecture. I just want to thank Caitlin and the staff for their thorough review of our project, and to apologize for the missing information on the drawings that generated these three conditions for such a simple project. But we of course, will provide all the material specifications. The intent is basically just to match what is existing already. The stucco will match the same color and finish. The windows will be a aluminum clad in a color that matches the existing. And we'll of course, add this information, dimensional information to the drawings when we come back for the COA stamp of approval, if approved today. If y'all have any questions, I'm happy to address them.
Are there any questions for the petitioner?
Thank you.
Okay, well, there are no public comment cards, so we will go into board discussion. Mr. Helms?
Helms, no comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
I want to thank you for your patience. You probably should have been at the beginning. I don't have any comments other than to say I think you've done a nice, simple design change, functions, looks good. Thank you. Meets the standards.
Mr. Thompson?
I did notice that you kept your distance earlier in the meeting over there.
Yeah, that might have been smart.
No comment.
Ms. Hamer? No comment. Okay, I will not go around a second time. We will entertain a motion. Don't be afraid.
Okay, make a motion that we approve this project at 216 East Taylor Street, 25-004653, presented by Homeline Architects, Eric O'Neill, for an addition, and approve the project as submitted because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance, with the conditions that the applicant provide product and material specifications for the stucco, windows, doors, awning, and stone decking, that he confirms that the windows will be inset at least 3 inches, and that he will update the drawings to show the height and spacing of the metal railings.
Do I have a second? Hamer, second. Okay, the motion is to approve with the following conditions being met. Provide product and material specifications for the stucco window doors, awning, and stone decking. Two, confirm that the windows will be inset at least 3 inches. Three, update the drawings to show the height and spacing of the metal railings. Helms, how do you vote?
Aye.
Coleman?
Aye.
Woodfield?
Aye.
Thompson?
Aye.
Hamer?
Aye.
The ayes have it. Thank you so much. Okay. So, let's see. The approved staff reviews, these are online. Work performed without a certificate of appropriateness, there are none. Let's see. Report on items deferred to staff. There are none. Notices, proclamations, and acknowledgement. Inspection completed by staff on October 2025 report. And stamp drawings report on October 2025. And then other business, anoint a nominating committee for the 2026 chair and vice chair. We'll be pushing that to the November meeting when the chair returns. And at that point, she will appoint members of our board for that nominating committee. And then, our next pre-meeting will be Wednesday, November 12th, 2025 at 12 p.m. at 112 East State Street. And our next meeting will be Wednesday, November 12th, 2025 at 1 p.m. at 112 East State Street.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Got a little announcement during the pre-meeting. I wonder if Kelly could come up and talk about her plans before we adjourn.
Absolutely no pressure here right now. Next Friday is my last day. I will be moving up to Northern Kentucky, working at Fort Knox with Texas State. They have a contract with the military to do cultural resource work, so survey work, community outreach, Section 106 and Section 110 and that type of work. So I'll be working on base to help them do that work. And it sounds like I'll be one of 5-person crew as well. So.
Yeah, well.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. We'll miss you, but we appreciate you moving up and on.
I'm excited.
Thank you. Thank you for serving so well.
Appreciate it.
And before we adjourn, thank you everyone for being so patient with me. I appreciate it. All right. Adjourned.